You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Environmental activists warn that there is no planet B we can go to if we don't stop destroying the one we live on. A new documentary called A Fierce Green Fire, The Battle for a Living Planet, investigates the environmental movement and the role of global activism over the last 50 years. It's directed and written by Mark Kitchell, the Academy Award-nominated director of Berkeley in the 60s, and narrated by Robert Redford, Ashley Judd, Van Jones, Isabel Allende, and Meryl Streep. It premiered at Sundance Film Festival in 2012 and opens tomorrow at New York's Cinema Village. And I'm very pleased to welcome its executive producer, Mark Weiss, along with environmental activist Lois Gibbs, who's featured in the film for the key role she played in the cleanup of the Love Canal. Welcome to our show.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Now, Mark, the film is named after the book A Fierce Green Fire, The American Environmental Movement by Philip Shabakov. Did you and your director just read the book and say, hey, we've got to make a movie about that?
Well, the book was definitely an inspiration for the film, although the film is a departure from the way in which the story is told in the book. Obviously, a book can be very comprehensive and very detailed. The film needs to choose a very small number of stories and tell them really well.
And you focus on five main stories in this film, including halting the development of dams in the Grand Canyon, Greenpeace's campaign to save whales and baby harp seals, the preservation of the Amazon forest, and the issue of climate change. But as you suggest, there are many more horror stories you could have told. So did you focus on these because they're emblematic?
Actually, you know, what I love about the film is that the first four of the five stories are really dramatic tellings of environmental activists coming up against what seemed in the moment as insurmountable. They were almost impossible to win when they started. And yet, in each case, they did win. In each case, they really did prevail in a significant way. And that kind of sets the table for the fifth section, which is about the challenge of climate change and what are we going to do about it.
It did help that you had some very nice footage.
The footage is extraordinary. The footage is very dramatic, and especially in more recent years. Mark had the great fortune of having a lot of other films that had been made over the years, and he was able to get the material from that. But really, for me, the strength of it is the storytelling.
And Lois, Mark mentioned that some of these situations seemed almost insurmountable. That is definitely true in your case. Had you been involved in environmental activism before the Love Canal case?
No, actually, I was not. I was a stay-at-home mom with two adorable children minding my own business, and Love Canal sort of came to me and bubbling up in my basement. And it is true. I mean, I think that I agree with Mark. That's one of the strengths of this film, because, you know, I now work with communities all across the country who are facing lots of different types of things, insurmountable. I mean, just incredible challenges. And the strength of this film, whether it's the whales, whether it's the Amazon, whether it's Love Canal, is that ordinary people, and it's shown in like real film, so it's not like a make-believe story, ordinary people just stand up and say, I'm going to take this on. And, you know, there's just huge challenges in front of them. They're a very long journey like mine, but they're able to overcome such huge obstacles. It's just amazing to just watch this film and see what people have done. It certainly encouraged me to go out and keep doing this work after 35 years.
How did you discover that Hooker Chemical Company had dumped 20,000 tons of toxic waste into the canal?
Well, it actually was a journalist, much like you, although it was a newspaper journalist, who had done these series of articles in our local newspaper that said there was this Love Canal, this dump site, 20,000 tons, and it went on to talk about the diseases and the different problems related to the chemicals, which we didn't know a whole lot about 35 years ago compared to what we know today. And I just read these articles and said, oh, my goodness. That's us. That's me. That's my children. Both of my children were sick at Love Canal, And, you know, I had historically just tried to figure out, like, what was going on and why were they so sick. And you know, with these articles just, you know, made it all come together. It filled in all the blanks. And it was right, the 99th Street Elementary School that my son attended kindergarten in, it was right there. I mean, the playground was over 20,000 tons of chemical. How could someone do that?
And there were a disproportionate number of birth defects of children born in the area, high rates of cancer and all sorts of other problems. Nobody had thought to wonder why until you learned about what had happened with this toxic waste?
Well, it was interesting because we did. We had 56% of our children born with birth defects at Love Canal. There was a number of studies that documented that. But the thing was that neighbors really didn't talk to neighbors and collect all that information until after we found out about Love Canal. And then we began connecting the dots, and it's like, This is the problem. But, you know, when you talk to your neighbor, you may know your neighbor's child is sick or they had a child with a minor or major birth defect or something. But you never in a neighborhood like this really put all of these things together until you're really saying, wait a minute, there's a flag here. We need to figure out what this flag means. And that's why we went out and did the study. And it had some pretty frightening information.
The film gives the impression that it was the housewives of the neighborhood who played the most significant role in the fight against Hooker Chemical Company and demands for relocation out of Love Canal from the government. Were the men also involved in the battle, or was this mostly a battle that women conducted?
Well, actually, men were involved, but one of the problems at Love Canal was that 80% of the community's men worked in the chemical industry. So imagine you're sending your husband out to the chemical industry to go to work every day, which puts bread on the table and a roof over your heads. So and then the women did the organizing because the men couldn't really do it, and they didn't feel comfortable doing it because they were fearful of losing their jobs or fearful of some type of retaliation. But for the most part, the men were very supportive. They just, you know, when you hear a jobs environment, we hear that a lot today even, it was really clear to us that the workers felt a little pressure from the industry, but that wasn't going to stop them from supporting the women and the other efforts at Love Canal to move this issue forward.
Was Hooker Chemical ever penalized for dumping toxic waste into the Love Canal?
Actually, they were, but it took a long time. It had to actually go through the court system, and New York Supreme Court did find them guilty and responsible for negligence. And as a result, Hooker Chemical, which is now owned by Occidental Petroleum ended up paying $197 million for Love Canal, and that was for the cleanup, for the relocation of families, for containing the waste, and for perpetual monitoring of the community from the day people moved out. So,
well, have you followed other families from Love Canal? Are there still residual health effects from the exposure to that toxic waste?
There is. We do follow them. We visit at least quarterly with some of the residents at Love Canal. We have a last dollar fund in which we find out about medical problems, because if the residents pay out of their pocket, this came from a lawsuit, we will cover that out-of-pocket cost. And what is interesting is that some of the acute problems went away, like the asthma and the skin rashes and things like that. But the cancers are there, the other diseases are there, but more importantly, what they're finding is the Love Canal children, so these would be my children, for example, the Love Canal children are having children with birth defect rates at the same level we did. So we're talking about over 50% of the Love Canal children's children are having birth defects, and that both the Love Canal families and the children's children, sounds complicated, but are having more girl babies than boy babies. And what that essentially indicates or is symptomatic of is that endocrine-disrupting chemicals have affected the system of our families and our children, because You know, these are all the things that we're finding in the new science. And that's really frightening because we're talking about my generation, my children's generation, and their children. So when you talk about these problems, whether it's Love Canal or the fracking that's going on in New York, or they want to have go on in New York, hopefully we'll continue to stop that. These chemicals are not about the immediate problem that you can clean it up, fix it up, move the people, or clean the air, and everything is okay. It is not okay. People are sick for generations and generations. It is not okay. It does not go away. And that's the seriousness of these environmental health issues that we face in this nation.
My guests are Lois Gibbs, who was an activist in Love Canal, later we'll get to some of the things that Lois did as an activist, some pretty controversial things. Also with us is Mark Weiss, who's the executive producer of a film called A Fierce Green Fire, The Battle for a Living Planet, which opens tomorrow at the Cinema Village at 22 East 12th Street. Mark, the film highlights some pretty controversial activists like David Brower, who was asked to leave the Sierra Club, and Paul Watson, who was forced out of Greenpeace. What did they do to be forced out of organizations that we generally consider to be pretty positive forces in our society?
Well, the stories are different, and the case of David Brower, of course, is that he was a very, very activist leader of the Sierra Club. It was an old organization founded in the late 1800s, and he came into leadership in the 60s and led it on an activist course, and I think he was moving too fast for the organization. It's interesting because I'm just recently joined the board of the Sierra Club Foundation, which is the nonprofit arm of the Sierra Club. And I was at a joint meeting last weekend and showed the first section of the film. Got just up to the point. It tells the story of Brower leading the club to victory, stopping the damming of the Grand Canyon. And then I turned it off right when it started talking about what happened next to David Brower, the fact that he was asked to leave. Mm-hmm. And everybody in the room said, wow, we want to see this. I said, okay, that's why you need to see the whole film. But so in that case, you know, there was tension within the organization. In the case of Greenpeace, Greenpeace saw itself as being nonviolent. That was very much in its founding principles. Paul Watson didn't go with that.
And he was very confrontational.
He was much more confrontational, and later started a new organization, which actually he bought a ship with funds that he raised, and actually rammed whaling ships and sunk them on the open ocean.
Well, at a certain point, the film suggests for some people, activism turns into radicalism because people feel frustration. Right. And to some degree, that's what happened with you, Lois, isn't it? You wound up, I guess, frustrated with all the resistance you were facing from the Carter administration and the EPA, that you actually held two EPA representatives hostage for 5 hours.
Well, we actually detained them for their own safety, is how I prefer to say it. There were 600 angry people out in front of Love Canal. They told us that we had and our children had likely chromosome damage, which is another sort of multi-generational effect from Love Canal, and we were told we couldn't send our children to school in the air, we couldn't go in our basement, we couldn't go in our gardens, we couldn't walk outside. I mean, it was just all building, and EPA came out and told us about this chromosome damage, and it was just frightening. It was so frightening.
But the government seemed to resist doing much about it. Thinking back to Jimmy Carter, who seems to be somebody who would have perhaps been more open to your pleas. Why do you think that happened? Was it simply a matter of not spending the money?
No, actually, it was way bigger than that. They didn't want to set a precedent. You know, Love Canal was really the first sort of organized public community. We weren't the first community fighting this battle, clearly, but we had the public's attention. And so they knew anything they did at Love Canal, they would have to do somewhere else. Well, according to their congressional research, they had potentially 50,000 other love canals across the country. So what they wanted to do in our neighborhood was minimize everything. They didn't want to spend the money. They didn't want to set those precedents that they might have to use at 50,000 other sites. And that's what why it caused us to do things like detaining those two gentlemen for 5 hours, because there was no other way to move them. We were sick. We were contaminated. There was evidence of both that you just couldn't deny. So it wasn't an issue of science. It was a political issue. Is the president going to do this? And if he sets a precedent, so be it. But is he going to protect the American people, not just at Love Canal, but at the other sites across the country? And so that holding the hostage really elevated it to national news, and the president had no choice because he was running for reelection. This was May, and he wanted to be reelected in November, and it didn't look good to poison the American voters. So,
but Mark, the next president he lost that election to, Ronald Reagan, was Ronald Reagan more open to the sorts of things that the Love Canal people were asking for?
Well, of course, we know that Ronald Reagan was tremendously hostile to the environmental movement. There's a clip of him in the film in which he says, you know, they wanted to turn the White House into a bird's nest. You know, Lois is such an incredible example of someone who really found her voice in activism. And in some ways, that's one of the things that I think is a theme of the film is ordinary people, not anybody coming from any particular privileged background or anything, kind of rising to the occasion and saying there's a crisis that we need to respond to. And I'll just say one quick thing, which is that the stories are inspiring and kind of frame the last section, which is the challenge of climate change and the necessity for a movement of people active all around the country to take it on and to give it a sense of urgency.
So will that be the focus of Earth Day? The 43rd Earth Day will take place in a little over a month, April 22nd. Is that going to be the theme?
Actually, the theme of Earth Day this year is the face of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing a project with the Earth Day Network, with the organization that has been doing Earth Day for 43 years. That will reach out to the young people in the country, to middle school, high school, and college age, to get them to raise their voice on the issue.
And Lois, you're the founder and executive director of the Center of Health, Environment, and Justice, which you launched in 1981. I suspect you're less concerned with climate change, although you mentioned fracking. You're more concerned still with the sorts of things that you had to deal with at Love Canal?
Well, I'm concerned with climate change as well as other issues, because they're all connected. You can't talk about, we work with people in mountaintop removal in West Virginia. We're working with people around coal-fired power plants. We're working with people in all of these in several places, including Syracuse, New York, and Oswego, around an Indian Point, around nuclear. I mean, all of these things are connected. They're really not a separate issue. Climate change is about energy. Energy and how we generate that energy really relates to communities, where it's being generated, and how do we create energy in a way that is not poisoning people or destroying our environment, but instead giving those folks in West Virginia or in Oswego or Shell Bluff, Georgia, a job that is a healthy job, that's healthy for their community and healthy for the environment. So I really don't see a disconnect. I actually think this is kind of holistic, because everything that's affecting climate change, whether it's cars on the highway or whether it's, you know, the energy creation at the ground, involves community. And it, more importantly, it involves people standing up, like Mark said, and speaking out, really finding your voice, because, you know, we don't have that much time. I mean, we need to move quickly. We just can't keep going the way we are with blinders on. We really need to take this bull by the horn. And there's so many alternatives out there. That's the part that makes me crazy. It's like, it's not like we don't know how to do this. We just don't have the political will.
The film that we've been discussing is A Fierce Green Fire, The Battle for a Living Planet, written and directed by Mark Kitchell. and narrated by an all-star cast, Robert Redford, Ashley Judge, Van Jones, Isabel Allende, and Meryl Streep. And my great thanks to Lois Gibbs, who's one of the heroes of the film, became an activist because of the situation in Love Canal and has now made it her life's work, and Mark Weiss, who's the executive producer of the film, which opens tomorrow at the Cinema Village on 22 East 12th Street. At least it opens here. It's opening nationwide tomorrow, isn't it?
It's opening nationwide. It's rolling out over the next month and a half and probably be in about 25 cities currently, and that's expanding.
Well, thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you. It's a real honor to be here. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks so much.